From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into the Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready. Neil is in the Clark Ford studio. I am in lovely Hoover, Alabama, rainy Hoover, Alabama. It rained all night, but it appears that at least baseball will start to be played on time this morning. I saw Chuck Dunlap of the SEC say that the 9:30 game would start at 9:30. Obviously, you'll know whether that happened or not by the time you listen to the podcast. But I'm here, Ole Miss and Auburn, 4:30 this afternoon from the Hoover Metropolitan Stadium. Loser goes home. Winner draws number one seed Florida tomorrow at 4:30 as well. So big day, Neil. Big day of four games, maybe some rain delays, a lot of strip malls and chain food, a lot of stuff going on in Hoover today.
I hate that I can't be there with you today. Okay, I'm okay.
You've experienced it multiple times.
I have. Chase, I've done it. It's an event, but it can really turn into long days. When I covered the SEC as a whole and I had to cover the whole tournament, I got to be honest, by the end of the second full day, I hated college baseball. Then it got better, but by the end of the second full day, back when it was, they didn't have this Tuesday thing, your patience was tested.
Hold on. You've covered the whole tournament before?
Oh, yes. Covered the whole tournament multiple times.
Like morning to night, four games every day.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'd kill myself. And I like college baseball.
And I've done it with college basketball, too. And I like college basketball. And I hated it.
Yeah, that moves faster, though. Baseball's worse.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue. The college baseball tournament can just drag.
Dang. Yeah, I was not aware of that. So,
anyway. Yes, sir.
We tell you a lot about Craddock Ole Miss Days. Today we'll tell you that they are the presenting sponsor for the You Gotta Believe football camp coming to Jackson. It is at Jackson Academy, July 6th and 7th. You can register online, ygbfootball.org. A lot of good dudes taking part in this. Dante Moncrief, Quincy Adebojo, Evan Ingram, and Cody Corr highlighting that event. So, NFL talent, if you'd like to be involved with that. Again, you can register at ygbfootball.com. That's at Jackson Academy, July 6th and 7th, and Craddock Ole presenting sponsors there. And then, as you said, Neil, you are still in the Clark Ford studio.
I am. I am in the palatial digs of the Clark Ford studio. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark, my fellow Cub fan, Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. He will send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours, and then the decision is up to you. You can take the quote and shop it all over creation. It's up to you. Or you can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they have done for so many listeners of this podcast, and that is take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's nice and easy, right to the bottom line. Get a great deal, great service after the sale, everything at Clark Ford in Amory. And then at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about the dealership on the podcast, and you'll get $500 off your bottom line at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-1900.
I think I accidentally hit something there. You kind of went out for a second.
662-257-1900.
Yeah. Still there?
I'm here.
Okay. Keep talking for a second. We're still live, but you kind of went away for a second.
Okay. Congratulations to the Nashville Predators. They won the Western Conference of the NHL. They'll go to the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, which is remarkable, really. Some of the pictures yesterday from Nashville, all the people everywhere. Really cool. That's cool that, and I realize it's playoff hockey and people love a winner and stuff, but still cool to see hockey or something like that get people in a southern city as excited as the people of Nashville were last night. That was a fun, fun third period to watch.
Yeah, not to cut you off. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Excitement is fine. Like I saw this conversation on Twitter last night, and it's not a matter of people who haven't always been Predators fans being happy for the Predators. It is level of obnoxiousness that separates the bandwagon fan you despise from the guy who dislikes cheering for the underdog, right?
Okay, I was like this way about the Cubs in October. All of a sudden, all of these people were lifelong Cub fans. And it was, no, you weren't. And it's okay to jump on the bandwagon on anything. But just say up front, hey, I'm hopping on the bandwagon. This is fun. I'm going to hop off as soon as it's over. The people you're happy for are the people that were in Nashville when the Predators got there, who bought season tickets and who said, you know what, I'm going to emotionally invest and financially invest in this team. And they've been going to the games. And yesterday was the night that they arrived. That's awesome. Cool. And it's great that a city, that people all over the city said, hey, an excuse to party. But don't turn it into, oh, we're hockey town. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're not Detroit. You're not Montreal. But it's okay. It's okay to celebrate. It's okay to have an excuse to have a party. I have no doubt that their fan base has grown. But the people you're happy for are the people that have been fans since they got there. Like Cubs. The Cubs fans you're happy for are the 70-something-year-old man who had thought to himself, I'm never going to see it, am I? And then he got to see it. That's awesome. You're thrilled for those people. Yeah, even Cardinal fans were thrilled for those people.
Yeah, it's one on the telecast that they did it correctly where they showed all the old people in the stands.
Yeah. I mean, I've only watched that telecast about 106 times. And
you recognize most of the 80-year-olds that they're showing at this point.
It's great.
Yeah.
That's great. They kept showing the old – when the Cubs won the pennant, when they beat the Dodgers in Game 6, the woman on the front row behind the dugout in her 80s, it was awesome. That's what it was about. I mean, we can all relate to that. So, I don't know. The whole – this makes Nashville superior to whatever. This is coming from someone who loves Nashville, loves it. I mean, I every time I go, I like it more. It doesn't have to turn into a my city's better than your city argument. It can just be, hey, isn't this cool? All the people. I mean, a lot of young people that live in Nashville said, hey, excuse to have a party. Cool. Put your Predator stuff on and go have a party. It's great. I hope they have another big one. I hope they win the thing and have a big parade. It'd be awesome. Cool. But I'm with you. The people who suddenly are lifelong Predators fans, those people are obnoxious.
Here on the podcast in a little while, we're going to talk to Kevin Weeks, Ole Miss alumni. He is on the show a good bit talking golf. He is the pro at Cog Hill just outside Chicago, which is close to the area where Ole Miss men's golf will compete in the national championships soon there at Rich Harvest Farm. So he's going to tell you a little bit about the golf course, tell you a little more just about some PGA stuff going through. We talked for a little while about a couple different topics, so that coming up on the podcast here in a little bit. Announced yesterday for the Auburn Ole Miss tonight, Brady Feigl gets the ball for Ole Miss at 4:30. He started the first 5 weeks of the season. Hasn't started since, been a bullpen arm. Been pretty good of late. A lot of good stuff. He's just got to kind of command it. Can't have wild pitches. Can't give away base runners in Hoover because the park's so big, you got to make them hit it. He does have 50 strikeouts, only 9 walks this season, though, so that is a good stat to pitch here at the Hoover Met. Auburn, somebody was lying or something's weird here because they're going back to Keegan Thompson today. He threw 6 no-hit innings against Ole Miss on Thursday. Butch Thompson told Kendall Rogers last week that he was dealing with arm issues. If you're dealing with arm issues, you throw Thursday, and then you turn around and throw again on Tuesday when you're already guaranteed a spot in the SEC tournament. Something does not add up.
Makes no sense. Makes no sense. What's your theory?
He really wasn't hurt, or coaches are really bad at knowing whether their teams are in the postseason or not. And the second one's true, and that's not a shot at Butch. Every college coach in the country has no idea where they sit on the bubble or in any NCAA projection. They always think they've got to win more games.
But Auburn's in.
But Auburn may not think they're in, is what I'm telling you. Yes, Auburn's in. 100%.
Well, that's on them. Listen. Bully for them. Try to win the tournament. If you want to try to win the tournament, whatever you want to do, it's your program. But
what was that?
A text.
Oh, it was really loud. Go ahead.
Sorry.
It's all right.
I
don't know. Nothing else makes sense. But if dude really has a sore shoulder, you're not throwing him on 4 days rest.
I wouldn't think. But not when you're going to turn around and pitch him again.
Next Friday. But here we are. I'm telling you, I just think coaches never know. I think it's ironic. I wrote this on the message board. I don't think coaches realize when they are in the tournament.
And I think it is the machismo of so many coaches. The tournament rolls around, and even though they know it is in their team's best interest to get out of there, they, by God, want to win.
Yeah. I mean, you're right.
It takes – most coaches are really competitive people. Turning off that competitive nature is hard. But if Auburn's in the tournament, and I agree with you, the metrics say that they're in.
Well, the conference record says they're in. Frankly, the RPI is bubbly as all hell, but I just don't think it matters. I think it's 16 wins, you're in the tournament.
I do too. So – because if they're not in, Ole Miss is done.
Ole Miss has an RPI 11 spots higher.
Yeah.
It's the weirdness of this bracket this year.
It is. My gut feeling is they're both in.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss is playing today to just remove all doubt, because if they win today, they're in. Period. They play tomorrow, number two RPI. They get the game on a neutral site, they're in.
If Thompson indeed has a balky shoulder, this is – weird on Butch Thompson's part.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, then you wonder why you told reporters that he did. I mean, Kendall didn't make that up.
Kind of laughed yesterday. Somebody asked Mike if he was worried about his players being tight, and he gave this big circuitous answer about how that would just make it more complicated, wouldn't it? Because if he was worried about his players being tight and they were worried about being tight, then it just wasn't doing anybody any good whatsoever. Basically, he was trying to present himself as loose as possible, no matter how much he actually felt inside. Made sense. It was kind of Yoda-ish.
Yeah. Kind of deep thoughts. He's had a lot of time to think about it.
Yeah.
Bottom line on this team is that they've just struggled to hit it enough.
They walked into the Hoover Met yesterday wearing their red, white, and blue. Where do you fall on Vanderbilt with all the patriotic uniforms?
Not crazy about them. I know this is sacrilegious, what I'm about to say.
Okay.
I like Major League Baseball. I like the Mother's Day stuff. Love it, actually. The Father's Day stuff, I think it's great. I like the 4th of July stuff when we celebrate the 4th of July. When they bust out the Memorial Day stuff with the camouflage, I absolutely hate it. And I'm that way with Vanderbilt and their red, white, and blue and doing the patriotic thing because it's Memorial Day weekend. I don't know. It feels forced.
They wear it a lot. It's not just a holiday thing for Vanderbilt. I mean, they have a red, white, and blue uniform that they incorporate into their suits. It makes you hard to even recognize them yesterday. Like, I mean, they're walking down the steps. You go, who is that? And you go, oh, it's Vanderbilt. Like, you're trying to think, okay, who else is red, white, and blue in this conference? And the doors are walking down. You go, that's kind of weird. Just to be warming up in it the day before a game.
That is weird.
Anything they can do to annoy you, Vanderbilt does that.
They annoy you well.
They get up in the morning. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
I like a lot of their players. Just the program as a whole bothers me. It's all because of the dang calisthenics.
I hate that. You know how I'm so glad that I am not an opposing SEC baseball coach, because I'm afraid I would throw stuff at them.
While they were doing the calisthenics?
Yeah.
You really think you would tell someone to lose a ball out in right field?
Yeah. I'll give you an example of how much stuff bothers me, okay?
Okay.
Carson's soccer team was playing a team from DeSoto or somewhere. They've played them a bunch. And there's a dad on their team who every time they score a goal, he does this cheer that ends with, "Whose house?" And all the other fans say, "Our house! Whose house?" And you're like, they're 10. I always want to just go have a brawl.
Do you mock them when your team scores?
No.
Okay.
I am not the guy who would ever have done a bat flip. I could have hit game seven, home run in game seven of the World Series in the bottom of the ninth to win the World Series, and I am going to put the bat down and run the bases. That's me.
On the bat flip, you're bordering on crotchety old man.
I understand
that. Just bordering.
I understand that. I am not a taunter. I do not taunt. Ever.
You and Joe Horn would not score touchdowns the same way.
No, I would never. No. I would be the guy, if I was talented enough to score touchdowns, who handed the ball to the official.
Yeah, I believe you.
So. That's the truth.
Speaking of DeSoto, it's one of the places that Community Mortgage is located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast, all underwriting and processing done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting and understands your market, also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can contact Jason 662-234-2704 by email. JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
Speaking of cheerleading, school's out for summer, and the Oxford Park Commission is just as excited as you are. Their summer program lineup is going to keep you active while making memories you won't forget. Tennis, golf, gymnastics, cheerleading, whose house? Our house. Fencing and karate are just a few of the many activities youth and adults can participate in. Registration is ongoing through May 31st. For more information, visit them online, oxfordparkcommission.com. Like them on Facebook at Oxford Park Commission. Follow them on Twitter at Oxford Parks Rec or Instagram at Oxford Parks. Live well, play well, have fun. The podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. He's an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. Harry's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better. It's harryalexander.com. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan, just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. It's a great place to make a car purchase. You can take my word for it. I've done it. Great service after the sale. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
So Ole Miss gets their times for the softball Super Regional against UCLA this weekend, or at least starting Thursday. Thursday and Friday are both at 8 p.m. Central Time, so 6 o'clock out on the West Coast, 8 o'clock Oxford time. Thursday, that's on ESPN. Friday, ESPNU. And then if there is an if necessary game on Saturday, that will start at 6 p.m. Central on ESPN. So there are your softball times beginning Thursday. Pretty good time slots, pretty good network as far as the channel for Ole Miss and UCLA, kind of your Cinderella team in the postseason, playing an absolute perennial power in the Bruins. So there's that. Congrats again to Mike Smith and all the people with that program, and especially to Lynette Johnson. It looks like that regional went off without too much of a hitch, Neil.
Oh, it was really well organized, really well done. Ole Miss should be commended. You wrote about it with Lynette earlier in the week about how they had the rooms and all that stuff. The facility was great. Everything was managed really well. I think, obviously the three teams that didn't win probably would have enjoyed it more had they won, but I think their experience was a strong one.
So yesterday, as we mentioned quickly on the podcast, the idea came up for us to try to hit Caitlin Lee, to hit a fast pitch pitcher. Again, we're going to go to Kevin Weeks here in a minute, but he sent me an article before we started the conversation this morning about why Barry Bonds, Albert Pujols, and others could not hit Jenny Finch, the former Arizona pitcher. And it appears that not only would we have no chance, but hardly anyone that hadn't seen it would have no chance. There was a thread on the message board about could you hit 200 or 150. I'm not sure that anyone could hit 50 as I continue to read about this.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried it before when I was younger and probably more athletic than I am today. And all I could do was foul a couple. I couldn't square it up. It was a completely different look than baseball.
Well, and that's kind of the key for this. They talk about that, you know, a 60-whatever-mile-per-hour softball pitch is equivalent to 94 or 95 because of reaction time, because it's only coming from 40 or 43 feet or whatever it is. And in baseball, you hit because you understand the plane of the ball and where it's going. Your eye doesn't technically see the ball all the way to the bat and just hit it off that. And in softball, you don't have that. So the article is very interesting on the way that arm angles work, on the way that your eyes work, that essentially you have to have experience instead of great reflexes. The great reflexes are not nearly as important as just the experience of seeing the softball pitch in. So I think we would have to have a ton of reps before we would have any chance whatsoever.
You know, it's like before the World Series when Kyle Schwarber was trying to get back, and here's a guy who's hit pitching his whole life. He had to go out to Arizona and stand in the cage. His hands were raw from hitting and track 1,090-something-mile-an-hour fastballs just to get used to – just to let your brain get used to processing them.
It worked. It worked.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's for you and me, we would – I don't – unless Caitlin Lee just grooved us a couple a lot slower than normal and said, here, hit it, ha-ha, I don't think we'd touch it. Unless we just got lucky and fouled it somewhere by happening to swing where it was.
Which is also possible, so we'll see.
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to go make a fool of myself.
We've done it before. We can do it again.
I've done it before. I can do it again. But
it's hard to kick field goals worse than we kick field goals, so this has to be an improvement over that.
The other day at Carson's baseball practice, so they were on the youth mound, which is 46
feet, or 48,
and the pitching machine was in front of the mound, so it's probably 40 feet.
Okay.
We dialed it up to 65. They pitched, in their games, it's at 35 miles an hour. We dialed it up to 65. And at 40 feet, that's probably the equivalent of, you and I were talking about this, probably 85 to 90.
Yeah, but it's similar to what you would see from a velocity standpoint with a softball pitcher.
I haven't hit competitively in 3 decades. I fouled a bunch off and finally hit a couple into right field. I'm a right-handed hitter.
But it was moving.
Yeah. It made a sound. It was making noise. I mean, it was the equivalent probably of an upper 80s fastball.
Yeah, you're not making me optimistic about this.
No, I mean I'm a realist. You know that. I don't like our chances. I mean, if we get to stand up there and take 20 to 25 to 30 pitches, we probably could make some contact at some point. If we're up there with one at bat, we're striking out.
Yeah, and I highly doubt Caitlin wants to throw a simulated game at us.
So. Yeah, I mean she seems like a sweet person. She probably would take it easy on us and groove something nice and slow so we'd have a chance. But if she got serious about it, we're hopeless.
Yeah, so we'll see. Well, let's transition, talk a little golf, but we do that podcast brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, surrounding areas. Founded on two simple philosophies. They do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it. They got open and honest communication with the customers and employees. I can vouch for that. I am a customer. No job or too large or small for MasterCuts. Some of their services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, and turf installation. So I've been telling you, they also do holiday lighting for the holiday season. So get a free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutsalon.com. Sign an annual contract. Mention the podcast. First cut is on them.
Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is currently offering a vehicle loan special, rates as low as 2.5%. OUB offers a full-service mobile app, which check your balances, transfer money, or deposit checks using your phone. OUB can literally service customers living anywhere in the U.S. In addition to all the best rates and gadgets, what makes OUB special is personal service. OUB has the absolute best people dealing with customer service. You always see a friendly face, always talk to an extremely knowledgeable person when you bank with OUB. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Now, Kevin Weeks on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Kevin, thanks for a few minutes this morning. Ole Miss men's golf, one of 30 teams up in your neck of the woods this week at Rich Harvest Farms. You and I kind of talked about it, I guess, a couple months ago about what the course was like and kind of some neat history around the course and whatnot. So I guess I'll ask you now. We'll kind of go through it as we start our morning. What's the path like for Ole Miss? What's the course like up there this week?
The course is an interesting golf course. It was designed by Jerry Rich, who has done a lot for golf up here in the Midwest. Jerry's a self-made billionaire. He invented some things that the New York Stock Exchange used, some software that got all their screens that they could put onto one screen so they can look at three screens now instead of 10. And he's really done a lot for golf, and he has designed the golf course himself with a little help from Gary Carpenter. So it's his baby. It's in fantastic condition. They don't have a lot of members. They don't get a ton of play. It is immaculately groomed. And he also, the guys will see a wonderful car collection. He is a car freak, and he's got one of the coolest car collections that you'll ever see, anywhere from vintage cars to cars that were in movies to experimental cars.
Are you a little surprised it's hosting? I mean, they don't have a lot of rounds there, not many members you talked about. Are you a little surprised that he's opened it up like this to the country?
Actually, I'm not, because this is what he wants to host, and also he's willing to close his golf course for 2 weeks, because to host an NCAA championship now, you have to have the women the week before the men, so your course is basically closed for 2 weeks. So it's going to be a special course that's generally going to be privately held that can give up their course for 2 weeks. He's hosted a Solheim Cup. He's hosted NCAA Regionals. They're the host of the home course for Northern Illinois University. So it's really right up. He's not displacing anybody, and he's getting the notoriety for hosting it. So I think it's a perfect storm for him.
We had Chris on the podcast last week, I guess, and he was mentioning going up early. They were going to walk, I guess leaving today, actually. He said they were going on today to watch some of the women play some courses in the area that had bent, that had some of the rye that they're going to have to face this week. I guess just from an amateur, to try to explain it from a layman's point of view, what is the challenges, what is kind of the difference, and what is the reasoning behind really needing to focus on that type of grass this week for Ole Miss?
I heard Chris say that, and we've had four teams, two women and two men's teams out at Cock Hill practicing, and I was talking to them, and they said the ball reacts differently around the greens, the little pitches, the little bitty shots of grass. The Bermuda is firmer, and you just have to learn how to hit the different feel at impact on it, and the ball reacts differently. It launches, the wedges launch at a different angle. They spin a little differently. The greens react completely different than Bermuda. I think it's easier to go from a green surface standpoint to go from playing on Bermuda to bent than it is to go from bent to Bermuda. The dent rough or the rye rough or the bluegrass rough is so much easier to manage than is Bermuda rough. I would rather be in 3-inch dent rough than 1.5-inch Bermuda.
And then this week, we don't really know what they're doing from a rough standpoint up there.
The rough that, I don't know how, I talked to some of the guys that had been out for coaches, that had been out for women's, and they said that the rough was manageable, but are they going to let it grow? Are they going to cut it inside the ropes? I don't know. I've got a feeling it's going to be a hard golf course because of what you've seen the women's scores. I looked at the women's scores in the regional versus the women's scores in the at the NCAAs, and they're really high. Every team scored much higher at the NCAA than they did in the regionals.
Obviously, they're going to get a few days on that kind of surface, but in your opinion, how much can that help? I mean, what do you get out of a couple days? Because obviously, you're not going to master it, but you're just trying to pick up something here or there. I mean, what is the focus of 48 hours up there, I guess?
Most of these guys have played so much golf, it's just re-educating themselves on how it reacts. Like Chris said, he plays tournaments all over the country in the season. In the summer, these players are playing tournaments all over the country as well. They're not just staying in the Southeast. They're going to the Northern Amateur, the Western Amateur. So they have played on it. It's more just re-educating themselves on how it reacts. They're not having to learn different shots. They're just having to readjust their thinking. By the first afternoon or after the practice round, they'll be fine. They will have made the adjustments.
Just kind of curious, we kind of bounce around a couple of things. U.S. Open in a few weeks, who do you like?
I don't know how you can pick against Dustin Johnson.
Maybe I should have excluded him in the question.
Yeah, exclude him from the conversation, because I think he's kind of like Tiger was back in the late 90s, and you have to include him. A guy I'm really interested to see, he's on the leaderboard every week, is John Rahm. Can he handle the what all goes around? I want to see how he handles that environment, because he is one heck of a player. And anytime it's a ball striping golf course, I like Justin Rose. He's a great ball striker.
What are they doing though at Erin Hills? Are they making that thing really, really long? Because I know at some points they have actual the ability to make those tees like 8,000 yards.
I think they will make it. I think they'll play it something reasonable, 73-50 every day would be my guess.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they'll stretch it out and make it, because the longer they make it, the fewer people they have that can win the golf tournament. And I think the Open wants to have a fair test where all types of players have a chance.
It's in the area. Is it similar to Whistling? I mean, what's that course like?
That course, it's not like Whistling, because Whistling sits right on Lake Michigan. Erin Hills is more in the middle of the state. It's west of Milwaukee, and it's a link-style layout. There's not a lot of trees. It's not a tree-lined, traditional wing-foot-type golf course. It's got some blind tee shots, and it's long walks between greens and tees, rolling hills. It's wide open. If the wind blows, it could play like a British Open or an Open Championship golf course.
I didn't ask you this a second ago, and I probably should have. There with the national championships this week, yeah. What is just the layout of the course? We've been talking about the grass, but I mean, what's the course like? Is it tree lined? Is it wide open? Is it your typical farm course? What is it?
The course is, it's got a little of everything in it. It doesn't. When I played it, I didn't think it flowed real well because it's kind of choppy, but it's got some holes on it that are just brutally hard. The women, through the first 3 days of tournament, they didn't have a birdie on the first hole.
Oh wow!
There was no birdies on the first hole. The fourth hole, when I played it, I thought the fourth hole was one of the hardest golf courses I had ever played, and the caddy was a student of mine who actually played in college in the group I was in. And as we walked to the tee, he was telling a story that one of the Champions Tour players had been playing with Mr. Rich. When he got to the tee, he goes, "What the hell is this? you hit it through a shoot chase that you can't miss it left, you can't miss it right. It's tree lined through the chute, and it is tight. And you've got to carry the ball 265 or 270 to have a shot at the green. And when I looked at the women's, they had it was played the second hardest hole in the first two rounds. That hole is just you can make six or seven on a lot of the holes out there. I think the golf course is it's going to be a fantastic match play golf course. A stroke play course, it's really hard, but match play is going to be exciting. The 18th hole is a really good par five, risk reward. You're going to see some birdies. You're going to see chances at eagle. I think if matches get there, that could be just a really great for television hole. And I thought the fourth hole was the hardest hole, par four, I had played until I got to 17. 17 might be the hardest par four I have ever played. It's 500 yards from the back tees. The green has a severe slope front to back, and if there's water in the front, and you can't bail out long, because if you bail out long, you might not be able to keep the ball on the green, and they shave the front. So if the ball rolls off the front, you can hit it in the water. And I looked at the women's scores there, and some of the really good players were making sixes, sevens, and eights there.
So other than that, it's a pretty easy hole.
Oh, yeah. Other than that, there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
It's one of those holes that they give you, say, hey, Chase, you can take five here. We'll see you on the 18th tee. Yeah. Would you do it? And it's one of those you go, thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Because, Leo, last year, it was just year one where I really saw it pick up, but TV ratings were pretty decent with the Golf Channel. They showed that in prime time with Texas and Oregon and those teams late in it. It was really good match play. You got into the sudden death thing, even though Texas was down a man, obviously, because Bo Hostler was out. It does seem like if they get some good matches and get a little luck just with the scoring, that it could continue to kind of increase awareness of college golf at night.
Oh, I totally agree. Match play really translates, I think, to television so much better than does stroke play, especially in that team format. You got the teams pulling for each other. I really, really think it's exciting. And I know I've had more students come up to me talking about it since they went to the match play format than they ever did beforehand, and I don't think it has to do with the Illinois resurgence over the last 5 years. I think it's just an exciting way for them to define a national champion.
I was going to ask you this a second ago when we were talking about more PGA and different things. Is a teacher, is somebody that looks at golf swings, and with the injuries that kind of continue to be recurring, should there be issues with maybe worrying about Rory's long-term viability?
I think so, yes. I've heard with his back, and I absolutely, what he does to his body when he makes his golf swing, I think that's one of the reasons he works out as hard as he does, is more for protection of his body than it is to hit it farther. I think it's more to protect backs and shoulders.
And there's no way. I mean, I can't see it. Really, this is the point. It's kind of like Rafael Nadal. I made that comparison one day from tennis. I can't see him as a guy that's going to suddenly change into some long flowing swing. It's probably just going to be a, you know, kind of a firework until it burns out.
I totally agree. Yeah, once you get to that point, you are who you are, and your body knows what it's done under pressure. You can make a long swing change, and you can make something a radical swing change. But when you get under pressure, your body's going to revert back to what it's comfortable doing. And his body is comfortable. It knows that golf swing. So no matter how much you practice, until you really put it under pressure, you're going to revert back. So to make his swing look like Phil's swing wouldn't happen. It would be like trying to shorten Phil Mickelson up and make his swing tighter, and where he was maybe a little tighter with the irons and wasn't as loose. Under pressure, I don't think that would work either.
Kind of last thing, appreciate the time today. Are they going to, do you think a lot of these rule changes end up getting implemented? Because, I mean, it kind of picked up last week, too, with what we were talking about with the college golf and the kid losing his ball into the lake. Are we going to continue to moving that direction? Is it going to kind of stop in the middle? Where do you kind of see in 5 to 10 years the rules sitting from a give-and-take standpoint?
At all. And I hope they keep making them more and more fan-friendly, player-friendly, without jeopardizing the integrity of the game. Oh, and absolutely. That's why they need to do something, because more and more people are not picking the game up. They're quitting it. They're going to something else. We need to make the play faster, and we need to make the rules a lot more fan-friendly and a lot easier to understand.
Right, no, absolutely, 100% agree. Well, Kevin, appreciate the time this morning. We'll talk again soon, and we'll see how Ole Miss does this weekend.
Chase, I appreciate it. Y'all have a great day.
Our thanks to Kevin Weeks for joining us on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline, the Rebel Locker Room, West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It's the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear, all the colors, all the styles there at the Rebel Locker Room. Ole Miss football season tickets available at OleMissTix.com. That's OleMissTix.com. Podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. If you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael a call. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in the state. Right now, the land market is hot. If you are considering buying or selling timberland, your hunting land share, your home with acreage, get in touch with Michael. All he wants is an opportunity to sit down with you, explain the process, and if you still don't want to go to him for your business, he says he didn't deserve it. His number is 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page. Send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com.
Have you bought your Kevin Durant voodoo doll yet?
I have promised to buy an authentic LeBron James jersey if the Cavaliers will beat the Warriors.
Who'd you promise?
Huh?
Who'd you promise?
I've done it on social media. I did it in 10 Thoughts. I'm doing it here on the podcast. You saw me wear a Cardinals jersey, so you know I will do this. I will wear a LeBron James jersey every day for a week of my choosing. But I will choose a week, and I will wear it every day and document it if the Cavaliers will beat the Warriors and make me happy.
Without a T-shirt under it?
Yeah, because I'm going to get one of those sleeve jerseys.
Oh, it's a cop-out.
It is a bit of a cop-out, but no, I'm not wearing the cheese jersey. I'd have to put a T-shirt underneath it. I'll get the black one they wear with the sleeves.
Why is your currency always buying jerseys?
Just something I do, man.
That's always your bet with the gods is I'll buy jerseys.
Yep.
So how you end up with Jock Jones jerseys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. Got it somewhere.
Whatever.
I have a Jock Jones. Who's the other one I have? Oh, Jorge Soler.
That's a little more okay.
Yeah.
Other than the whole don't believe your team thing, but other than that, it's fine.
I need to get Jorge Soler to sign that jersey. That'd be awesome.
Probably make that happen somehow.
I think I could get that to work, especially if he knew the backstory.
Yeah. Celtics aren't going to win again, right?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, the hot takes yesterday on LeBron James and one playoff game. Oh, my God. Our field. Just. Whew.
Click, 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 click.
Click, yep.
Click, click.
One game. One game, Chase. Michael Jordan's teams lost playoff games. Michael Jordan had bad playoff games. He did.
Never scored 11 points in one.
That's true.
Took 43 shots sometimes, but... That.
Yeah, he had... Look, he is inarguably one of the two best players to ever play the game. I'm not taking anything away from Jordan.
I do love how that's suddenly a shot, though. One of two best ever, and it's, oh, well, you're downgrading him.
Oh, you're ripping on Jordan. You're a hater. What? It drives me insane. But Jordan did have games in the playoffs where he was remarkably inefficient. If the expectation is for LeBron to be a 10 out of 10 every single game, well, that's ridiculous.
That is the expectation.
The only thing about Durant that bugs me is some of the hindsight shots that he takes. Kind of bugs me.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you made your decision. You're cool. It's cool. I mean, you earned free agency. You had the right to do what you wanted to do. But to act like, oh, there were all of these things that happened that went wrong in Oklahoma City, that's disingenuous at best.
So how many games do you really think the finals are going to go?
Six. Maybe seven.
Who's got home court?
Golden State.
Okay. Just curious.
You know what's funny is, and a lot of this I'll admit is because of the Durant factor, but there's also some fatigue of the series. It doesn't start till June the 1st. I watch a lot of NBA, more than I probably should. I'm not particularly interested.
And you have an emotional reason to be interested.
Oh, I have an emotional reason to be a Cleveland Cavaliers cheerleader.
Yeah.
But I'm not particularly interested.
It's kind of fascinating.
It'd be fun to see some different teams.
Yeah.
I think, and I saw some other people say this last night on Twitter, I think what was disappointing last night is you watched the Spurs limp to the end.
They finally looked old. Took this long.
Yeah. Well, they always look old in the playoffs. They looked old in the playoffs last year when the Thunder beat them in the Western Conference semifinals. I think those of us who understand what it would have been like if Durant had stayed know that we got cheated in a way. And look, I don't blame Durant. He has the freedom to do what he wants to do. And if he wanted to go to Golden State, he earned the right to go. But man, that would have been an awesome Western Conference Finals.
Right.
If the Thunder had done what they were going to do, the Warriors would not have been quite the same. And it would have been an epic Western Conference Finals. Instead, we got last night. And the Spurs, I mean, it's not their fault Kawhi's hurt, but that was the end for Manu Ginobili in all likelihood. First ballot Hall of Famer, fantastic player, had a hell of a career. You know, and now Tony Parker's hurt, Tim Duncan has retired, probably the end for Manu. Kind of do wonder where the Spurs go from here.
Yeah.
Chris Paul.
It's intriguing. So, Warriors aren't going anywhere, though. So, again, Cavs eventually, and then Golden State in the finals once again. Coverage from Hoover at rebelgrove.com. Check that out again. Ole Miss and Auburn, 4:30 today. Brady Feigl versus Keegan Thompson on the mound for that one. Loser goes home to wait a week or so to find out what's going on. With them, the winner gets Florida tomorrow at 4:30. So let's all pray for no rain. Let's keep delays to a minimum. And again, stay locked in, rebelgrove.com. Thanks to Kevin Weeks for his time today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.